Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. A powerful committee reviewing the core mission of the university system is scheduled to make its final report next month. The committee includes prominent Republican political leaders and conservative campaign funders, as well as education officials. It's prompted fears about what its recommendations could mean from everything from tuition policy and overall funding to research and academic integrity. A few weeks ago, we talked to an influential member of the committee, former UNC Board of Governors Chair Hannah Gage, about the direction the group was headed and what was at stake for the university system. Here's an encore presentation of that interview as the committee moves toward winding up its work. Well, thank you very much for being with us on News and Views. I know you're busy and we appreciate your time.
I'm glad to be here.
A lot of things to talk about in the minutes that we have together. First, tell us a little bit about the UNC Committee on Strategic Directions and what your hopes are for this committee.
You know, this is a committee that is focused on how we can not only establish degree attainment goals for the university, but how we can link more effectively college with careers so that families and students who are looking very closely at the cost of the investment have a greater chance of finding employment when they get out. I think a misunderstanding is that this is an effort to vocationalize the universities. I don't think that's the case at all, but what we are trying to do is advise students in a better way so that when they're selecting their majors and determining what they want to do after they graduate, that they'll have greater chances of finding a job.
How do you walk that line between, I guess, encouraging students or letting them know which careers are most likely to get them jobs, but also not dissuading them from pursuing a degree in English literature if that's their passion, or learning about how to think and all the other things that come with being at college?
I think you provide the information, and it's up to the student to decide. I don't think we're talking about any kind of requirements, and we're not talking about tracking kids. But I think one thing that has been weak on many of our campuses is the kind of counseling and advice they get as they're making their choices. One interesting conversation I had not long ago with a student who was a French major from one of our institutions who actually was working with a consulting firm. She said, "I got an incredible liberal arts education, but because I took business accounting, and I also took Excel for a semester," which is a huge thing nowadays, when she couldn't find a job in her major, she was able to impress individuals when she was interviewing in businesses. And she found something that she loves. Now, maybe she'll go back to French, you know, at some point. But the point that she made to me was that not only did I get a deep liberal arts education, I also graduated with some specific skills that helped me find employment. So I don't think any of this is either or, and I don't think we're trying to put people in boxes, but we're trying to make sure they're aware of the options if they choose to go down some of these paths that may not have strong chances for employment.
I'm sure you've heard the point of view expressed by some folks in the public policy world that too many kids are going to college and that we shouldn't be encouraging as many kids to get a college education. I wondered sort of what your thoughts are and how that, if it has, surfaced in the committee's work.
You know, I think that it surfaced on our board 4 years ago when we began to shift and move away from the model that we were using, which was focused on growth. But it wasn't because this person should or shouldn't go to college. What we did was look at the push to take more students and then the results of that push, and discovered that we were failing. They weren't qualified. They were dropping out. They were leaving with debt, no prospects for jobs without the degree. And so that's when we moved away from that model that pushed just growth and expansion to a model that focused on performance. And I don't think it's, you know, us sitting in this high position determining which child has college potential and which child doesn't. But the reality that we don't serve the state or serve these families if we take a child that is not going to be successful. And we take lots of students that have potential but maybe, you know, fall slightly below in certain ways because we know that with help and support they can be successful. But I think that we also have to be able to show a correlation, Chris, between the state's investment in the university in our ability to graduate students. And there were many, many years when we took hundreds of millions of dollars and the state kept pouring money into the university, and we didn't improve our graduation rates one bit. So we kind of regrouped and moved in this different, you know, in a different direction that we hope that we will position students for being successful. Part of that is moving a lot of students through the community colleges for the first 2 years. They have wonderful ways of you know, better programs for remediation, and we're finding that this is a wonderful path for students that may not be quite ready to start as a freshman on a university campus, but do very well when they go to the community colleges first and then transfer. I don't know if that directly addressed your question, but it certainly covers kind of our philosophy about how we try to help students, but also don't set them up to fail.
You mentioned the state investment in the budget, and you were chair of the Board of Governors for 4 years, probably the four toughest budget years in recent memory. Have the budget cuts hurt? I mean, where are we in terms of public support for our university system?
I think the budget cuts have hurt. There's no question. And things seem to be stabilizing right now. You look at class size, you look at all the measures of, you know, of how effective we can be, and you've got, you know, faculty teaching more, students that can't get classes, students that are in much larger classes. And so that has been painful. But things are stable now. And I think that part of the process that we're going through now, Peter Hines and I refer to this as the next stage of turning the big ship. The strategic planning that we're doing right now, we hope will give us a strong narrative when we go to the General Assembly with our budget, because we've got a growing state and we will need continued funding.
There's been a lot of discussion about the tuition at University of North Carolina campuses. Where do you think we are on tuition? I know the Board of Governors discussed the policy of setting aside 25% to help defray the cost. The legislature did cut need-based scholarships. Are you confident that we're still going to be able to, the kids that qualify to go to college will be able to go regardless of their financial situation?
I think that was a problem in the last 2 years, and I think that we have to gather more information about how many students actually didn't come back because of that. There's no question that we will need strong financial aid, not just now, but looking down the road, because we've got the poorest population we've had in a long, long time coming through high schools right now. So if we want an educated population, we're becoming a state that will be a majority-minority state. And these are legal citizens, and I always underscore that so that people don't misunderstand and think that we're giving in-state tuition to students that we shouldn't be. But we have a new population that will determine what North Carolina looks like in 20 years and how successful we are. So our ability to not just hold tuition down, but provide financial aid will be critical if we want an educated state.
We only have a couple minutes left. I want to ask you quickly about the way the Board of Governors is appointed. It's all of it is elected by the General Assembly. You've been there for a good while. Is that a good idea?
You know, I think it works. I actually think the way that it's done works. I think that, and the size of the board, as cumbersome as it can be, the upside of having a board as large as ours is that there almost always is somebody from every part of the state. And so that voice is represented. I don't know the perfect way, but the longer I've served, Chris, the more I've realized that it's a pretty good system. The governance structure that President Friday created does work. I don't know a better way. The other thing that states come to us all the time, that, you know, when we run into board members from other states, and they look on us as being the model for what works the best. So I think it works, but the legislature, you know, obviously is in charge of that, and they can make whatever changes they want, but I hope that it stays stable.
Well, I wish you had more time. We'll have to have you back. We really appreciate you being with us. Thanks for what you're doing for the university, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.